Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. This podcast is produced by Education Child Protection, and on each episode we explore a different area of safeguarding. Our aim is to empower professionals who work with children and vulnerable adults with information and guidance. In this episode we are joined by Gemma Chaffee, the designated safeguarding officer for Hertfordshire Football Association, sharing processes and safeguarding systems in county football. Okay, welcome back, listeners. Really excited on this month's episode to introduce to you all Gemma. I wonder if, Gemma, you could say a few words about what your role is within Hearts FA.
Yeah, thanks, Carly. So my role at Hertfordshire FA is I am the designated safeguarding officer here. So I deal with all safeguarding concerns that come through from all youth, adult, vets, walk-in, disability, football teams across the whole of Hertfordshire.
Fabulous, thank you. And so nice in our podcast to kind of explore safeguarding in sport, in football in particular, and looking at all the kind of mechanisms that are there at county level, not just to support your players, but also your staff and, of course, spectators, the community. And really that kind of leads me to our first question, you know, why safeguarding in sport? Surely issues do not happen here is often the phrase we hear. What's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the phrase that we always get. It doesn't happen here. It doesn't happen in sport. Doesn't happen in Hertfordshire. I can assure you it absolutely does. People always assume that in Hertfordshire it's with the deprived areas that things happen in. It's not. It can happen in the affluent areas as well. And the reason we have safeguarding within football is off of the back of the Clive Sheldon QC report, which was an investigation around non-recent child sexual abuse within football. Survivors came forward to say they had suffered abuse in football and nothing was done about it. So this came off of the back of that, and safeguarding standards were put in place by the FA in 2017. Mm-hmm. So we now all must comply with it, and we are independently assessed by the NSPCC to make sure we are meeting these requirements to show safeguarding is embedded throughout our county.
And that kind of harm and those really courageous individuals that stepped forward to share their experiences, who were the kind of people that were posing the risk?
So the risk posers, the perpetrators, as we say, were coaches and managers, the people in position of trust. Families trusted them, the players trusted them, they were sold the line of you'll make it big if you do this, and that was then. We still hear that now, unfortunately. So it's really scary. You know, there are so much more in place, but it's still happening out there, and it's making sure that, you know, we make sure football is a safe environment for everyone.
And that whole thing around, you know, sport, recreation, it should be a safe space to enjoy, to engage, and particularly at a community level. And sadly, as we know, you know, those that have intent to cause harm, whether it be to children or to vulnerable adults even, will deliberately look for opportunities that give them that access.
Absolutely, yeah, and we see that all the time. What we use to tell everyone, including our staff, is the kind of the fried egg kind of picture. So you've got the child in the middle, the complete circle, but when that circle becomes wavy, it's where those cracks appear, and that's where those perpetrators will try and get in. And we know, and it sounds horrendous, but people that are perpetrators of this kind of stuff will try and get a position in football, because if they've never been caught, the checks that we do on them, like a DBS check, they're going to come back clear, and then they've got opportunity to be with children, young people and adults at risk. So, you know, we do what we do to make sure that doesn't happen. And if it does happen, we have things in place to then stop it and support those people and victims.
Yeah, and that whole kind of term, position of trust, I think is so key, isn't it, in the sporting arena? Because whether it be the young person, their parent, particularly when they want that success, you know, they put a lot of trust in those professionals.
Absolutely. And obviously now with the change in the law of the position of trust to include coaches in a sexual relationship, you know, that's a big, big thing for us. And we raise awareness throughout to say, actually, you know, it now namely states coaches, which is never done before. And to make it hit home to life, I've had a case this week that has involved someone in position of trust with a player. And like you say, what they said is it was just banter. I thought it was the norm, and that's the culture that we have to change. And we're trying hard. We know it's going to be challenging. And we know that, you know, people do think that happens in football, and it is just the banter, but it's changing that actually it's not acceptable. If anyone is in a position of trust, you trust them for a reason. They should not break that trust and cross those lines with you.
Yeah, and I think coming back to that term culture, you know, sometimes you think particularly football and the fans can get quite a bad rep. Yes. It's a highly emotive situation. A lot of passion, a lot of feeling goes into not just the playing of the sport, but the watching of the sport.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And you have it with the spectators. I've had it before and I've gone and done a visit on a club. I've explained who I am. I've had spectators literally stand there and go, what do you mean? What are you here for safeguarding? It doesn't need happening. It's just banter. Stop ruining our game. Mm. And it's like, and that's that culture we need to change. Because if we were able to say, well, actually, we've had this case here. We're here to support these people. Would you then be saying, oh, it's just banter? If that happened to that someone you knew or a child that you knew. So it's really difficult, but you know, slowly we're chipping away at it and people are starting to understand, which is great. It's just the, you know, it's going to be challenging. It's challenging for every sport, but we're chipping away at it.
Yeah, and I suppose that was part why, you know, we were so happy to have you available to do this podcast with us, because it's that starting with awareness raising that, you know, the sad reality that harm does happen in lots of spaces, but particularly in spaces which should be full of fun and enjoyment.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, it's important, therefore, not just for, you know, people who are taking part in the sport to be aware of the systems of support, but also the community that's engaging.
Absolutely. And we always say, you know, everyone should have the right to check and challenge. So when it comes to football, you have, you know, a wide variety of people that are involved in clubs. But there are namely, especially in grassroots youth, there are four key officials that, you know, every club should have, which is your chair, your secretary, your treasurer, and a welfare officer. So they're called club welfare officers and abbreviated normally to CWOs. Mm-hmm. Those CWOs are my eyes and ears out on a field, on a pitch with the club. So they report to me directly if they have any concerns around safeguarding, poor practice, low level concerns. If they just want to touch base and just check and challenge something that doesn't feel right. Those guys are literally key to making sure everyone is safe in football. They don't do it on their own because they have a committee to support them, but they are specifically trained to be able to recognise, respond and refer to concerns, know how to deal with disclosures. They also know that they have me on the end of the line, so they just pick up a phone, they call me, they email. We have a Teams channel together where I share best practice with them. And what's really, really key about a welfare officer is that they should be known around the club completely. Everyone should know who they are. Their name and face should be recognised, so that when you've got new people joining clubs, parents, carers, everyone should know who they are and know that's who they turn to report a concern. Mm-hmm. We always say doing nothing is not an option. If you report something, you're not likely to get in trouble for that. It's if you don't report something, you're going to, because you've known about it and not done anything about it.
You haven't prevented possible harm
that.
Then.
Exactly that. So, you know, they're never on their own. Welfare officers are never on their own, but they are pivotal within youth football. Every club has to have one.
Yeah,
it is mandatory, and it's mandatory that they all DBS check, safeguarding children's course, they have a welfare officers course. And it's new actually coming in. It started this season, but adult clubs with open age now also have to have a welfare officer alongside vet teams as well, because the FA have realised, you know, there are harm and risk to
adults.
Children and adults. Yeah. So open age is children 16 and 17 year olds that play in adult teams.
Okay.
And that we are going to have adults at risk with care and support needs that also need our support. So it's getting bigger. We're recognising that there is risk in that adult game now as well, which is fantastic. Again, it's going to be challenging for people to understand that because it's new, but the more and more we reach out about it, we share why we do what we do, the more people are going to understand it. But welfare officers are key to our network around safeguarding and sharing and reporting concerns.
And I suppose some of that resistance sometimes comes back to the notion of maybe not wanting to acknowledge or confront that there are difficulties in the game.
Absolutely. And I think because everyone loves the game and football has such a big reach and, you know, everyone loves football. You know, if you're part of it, everyone loves it. It unites you as a community. And some clubs are community clubs and everyone knows everyone. People have been doing it for years. And to shake that up a little bit, if someone's got a concern, they will be concerned, well, now will I not be played? Now am I going to get someone in trouble? You know, it's changing that perception. No, you've never done anything wrong. Please pass it. Yeah. You know, you're better to pass something, because if something was to happen, the reputational risk to that club, to you as an individual, could be quite damaging. And that individual that's suffering the abuse, you know, if someone knew about it, you need to pass it on. So it's really key.
And kind of that pivotal role, as you said, of the club welfare officers being there, being the eyes and ears, and being the sounding board, I suppose, not just to, you know, the players, but to staff, to parents and carers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're part of a club, the first question you should be asking as a parent or carer is, who is the welfare officer for this club? Let me go and find out who it is, how to contact them, how do I reach them, where can I find them? Because if you ever have any concerns around anyone in the club, you should be reporting that to your welfare officer, because they then soundboard with me if they need to, to just check and challenge. You should never ever feel that you can't go to your welfare officer. The only thing, if you didn't want to go to your welfare officer, if you had a concern around your welfare officer, is where you would then potentially come straight to me as a designated safeguarding officer, or you could go to the chair of the club. You know, there are always different avenues, but it's about recognising and knowing and asking those questions from the club. Where do I go? Who do I turn to?
And what would be the types of possible worries or concerns that parent and carers may have or have brought to club welfare officers? What are the types of things they could talk to them about?
Yeah, so I mean, they could talk to them about anything. So some of the low level stuff that welfare officers have to deal with specifically that doesn't come across my kind of desk because it's not safeguarding per se would be, you know, playing time, children not getting enough playing time, my child's been sat out, it's, you know, not great for their mental health kind of thing. Club welfare officers deal with that. They deal with what we class as poor practice if a coach was shouting at a child on the sidelines, you know, just that kind of language, not great. However, if that hit a threshold where they were continuously swearing, continuously berating a child, that would need to come to me so we can have a look. But the things that come across my desk, which sound horrendous, are you kind of things around inappropriate contact from a coach to players, and indecent images. Are a very known, new, up-and-coming thing right now, really, with cases involving clubs. What I always say as well is, be for parent and carers especially, check your kids' phone. Snapchat is back up and coming again, and it's very, very concerning for me as the DSO. This is what I'm seeing. It's being used all the time at the minute. But, you know, your welfare office is there to soundboard off of. Go and check and challenge anything. Even if they will tell you whether it's something they can deal with, something they can't deal with, and then they will come to me. And like I say, if they didn't want to go to the welfare officer, my name and my number is on our website as well, so anyone can reach out to me as well as a parent, which I think is nice. You know, they have that two street avenue if they wish not to go to their welfare officer and want to come to me directly.
Yeah. And would your role, Gemma, be sort of like equivalent in other county clubs? Is it typically as of the structure of support, particularly for parents and carers?
Yeah, so I think so. So the the structure for all youth clubs is that everyone has a welfare officer. For every county, we all have a DSO now.
Designated Safeguarding Officer.
Sorry, that's it. Yeah, so you'll hear it called as a DSO just because it's such a mouthful, Designated Safeguarding Officer. But other counties actually will call their DSOs different titles as well. So some will be called Safeguarding Managers, but ultimately we all do the same role. But other sports are not quite there yet with it. So, but now Sport England have now put in place sport welfare officers, which will support all the other clubs, which is going to be fantastic. So football kind of have led the game with this one, where we have DSOs in place, but other sports are now going to be supported by sport welfare officers, which is fantastic. And it's just going to be great for the game after having the white review from the gymnastics, you know. It's perfect. This is exactly what these sports need. So it's going to be really, really great. And I'm looking forward to hopefully supporting them as well, especially in Hertfordshire, to help assist, you know, work with them, which will be really, really good.
Yeah, because I think it's that whole thing that actually this safe play type culture needs to be across different games. It isn't just football specific, as you mentioned, gymnastics. Sadly, we've heard lots in the news and the media, lots of partnership case reviews around harmful behaviours towards, you know, the actual athletes themselves. It could sadly happen across different...
And we know that some of our kids that are in football do other sports as well, so having the same kind of structure, they're going to understand, well, I report it this way in football, I can now report it this way in another sport. So it's fantastic. And, you know, all these kids go to school, but you have to go to school, you choose to play football, so that trust you build up, and you know, you want to be there, so they are likely to say something at football or at a sport potentially more than they are at school.
Yeah.
So it's knowing how to recognise those signs and how to respond is really, really key in football.
Yeah, and relationships are so important as well. So for the players, for, you know, children in particular, to have those really good relationships with staff, particularly like the club welfare officers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it might be actually the other person they are closest to could be the one possibly causing harm.
Exactly that. The coach. Yeah, exactly that. So the FA regulations for grassroots youth football is that every team must have two coaches alongside them as well, to safeguard the coaches themselves, but also it safeguards the children as well, so that if there was a coach that was potentially harmful to the child, there's the other coach they can go to as well, or and then that coach can feed into the welfare officer. So we put everything in place we possibly can to support these children and young people to make them safe.
So those key messages for any sort of parents and carers that are listening, you know, if your child, someone you have caring responsibilities for, is part of the game, you know, and you just want to seek out questions, know what the support structure is like at the club, the club welfare officer is your go-to.
Yeah, your club welfare officer absolutely is your key. And I'd also say, if you're in Hertfordshire, go on the Hertfordshire FA website, check out our staff. There's a full page on there. You can find who I am. You can see my contact details. Put them in your phone as well, but make sure you've got your club welfare officers' details in there. And we always say as well, put your NSPCC number in there too, because they're there to support regardless. Even if you didn't want to report directly to the club or to us as a county, you can go to NSPCC and we would still work there as well. So yeah, there's always avenues you can go to.
Yeah, really important to know. Thank you, Gemma. And I think, you know, on that kind of basis, whether you are a parent who has a child engaged with football or whether it's another sport and discipline, knowing about these key people in the club that is very much being rolled out from Sport England is really important, because you want your children to enjoy the activity but to be safe whilst enjoying and I know Sport England, you know, are very much building upon this, as Gemma's just referenced. And there's lots of campaigns out there, you know, just thinking of one's local back to football, like the Play Safe campaign. I wonder if you could say something about that for us.
So our Play Safe campaign, it launches every year, normally around the end of October, the beginning of the end of September, the beginning of October. And it's around making, you know, we're back in Play Safe is what we normally say, around making football safe for all. Each year we'll have a kind of different theme. This year it was everyone, everywhere, every time, which is quite obvious with what it means, that everyone has a responsibility to safeguard children. It's not just one person, it's everyone. What we say though at our county is that it's not just for one weekend of the year. It's 365 days of the year that this campaign should be raised around. You know, we need to make safe football safe for everyone, so we continuously support it, that's by leafleting, having it on our website, staff uniform, we've had hoodies made with Play Safe on them, just so that people can recognise and see the little everyone, everywhere, every time. Brilliant, I know what that means. So they're great campaigns that we support alongside the FA, the Premier League. So at Shield this year, at Wembley, around the bottom was all the Play Safe stuff. We bring out pin badges that welfare officers and coaches wear. And you'd have seen the Premier League teams had pin badges on as well. So it goes right the way up through football. And what we've said is children will see, you know, their teams. They're almost like
the idols, that's the role models.
Their idols, role models, wearing those. And they understand, we should be wearing it. So the children got captain's armbands to wear. So they were all wearing them to promote Play Safe, because, I've just seen my idol wearing one. I'm absolutely wearing one. So it's fantastic, because the reach is massive across football, and we have a real buy-in from our top clubs right the way down through to our grassroots. So it's a really, really important campaign, and one that we're proud to be part of as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, really at that kind of elite level, having the backing there, as you said, the reach that gives, you know, not just here in the UK but globally, there's a real kind of, you know, springboard, if you like, when it is taken on board by those sort of premier clubs.
Absolutely and that's why everyone just wanted to wear their armbands or the pin badges. I've seen it on telly, we've got to get ours out. So it's fantastic, and we tell them, wear them all year round, you know, raise that awareness that, and especially to your parents, carers, spectators, that it's not just one weekend, it's 365 days a year that a child has a right to be safe.
And knowing who those key people are at every club, county level to report to, really, really important. And hopefully a key takeaway for our listeners today, whether you are, of course, a professional working around the safeguarding sector, whether it be for children or adults, or even just as a parent and carer, those key roles that are out there and the wonderful work that's going on across different disciplines in sport to really ensure consistency of those key messages. Thank you so much for your time, Gemma. It's been great to speak with you. I'm sure our listeners have got lots of key takeaways about how to support in the sector. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this latest episode of Safeguarding Voice. For any documentation, guidance or resources referenced in this episode, please see the show notes. And a special thank you to Gemma for joining us. This podcast is produced by Education Child Protection Limited and was hosted by myself, Carly Dames. Music production by Abby Dowsett. For more information about safeguarding, you can find us on all the social media platforms, LinkedIn, X, Facebook and Instagram. And please do listen to more of our episodes that are available on the resources area of our website, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you have time, please leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you.